Accession number 33514, reel 1.
London. We talked actually on the telephone, and I hope this is not an inconvenient moment for you, is it?
No. All right.
We talked about 2 years ago, and I wrote to you, and you wrote back to me, saying that you would give an interview to the BBC. Well, now at that time, I was doing a documentary for the BBC. And then, as happens in life, my husband became ill and spent a couple of years in hospital and died. And so the project that I was doing, as far as I was concerned, of course, I let go. But the BBC has now, because of D-Day coming up on the 6th of June, has come back to me and asked me whether I will reconsider doing the project of your father, the Field Marshal at La Roche-Guyon, the role that he played there, and I wondered whether it would be possible. Just to ask you, really, there are really only a couple of questions that people find very, very difficult, and you would know the answer to this. General Speidel, in his book Invasion, which is such an interesting book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really
a good book. Yeah.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. What I want to show, you see, is something that I think the English and almost probably the Germans really know very little about, and that is just how many German high-ranking officials and people, ordinary people and civil people and so on, were engaged in trying to get rid of this evil that they had and put something in its place that was good. Now, the Field Marshal, when he was at La Roche-Guyon, General Speidel says that he saw and talked to a lot of what is termed conspirators, for a better word, and that he was involved in so far as he did not want Hitler assassinated, but he did want him removed. Do you find that to be correct?
Yes, certainly. My father saw that the war was lost since Alemania. This was absolutely clear to him, and he looked for a way out, to at least to have a peace with conditions.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And this was his point he was aiming to, and he hoped that in case of a German success in the Battle of France, there would be an offer from the Allied.
There would be, I'm
would
sorry?
Prepare, the Allied would be prepared to accept a peace with conditions.
Yes.
But after the first week, my father was almost certain that there will be no talk about conditions, and that that the Germans had to surrender without any conditions.
Yes.
And he wanted to, at first, he wanted also to convince Hitler, but
yes, he would
he
not
saw,
listen. Yes.
He didn't seize this chance, only maybe 30%, and then he made a plan to surrender the German troops in France to the Allied.
Yes.
But
yes.
He was, my father knew about the general idea of assassinating Hitler. Yes, this was also the reason because he was killed. But he thought that this was a great risk, and this was bound to fail possibly. And he also believed that the dead Hitler might become be much more dangerous than the living Hitler.
Yes.
While surrendering the German troops, this was not out of the capability of imagination of a soldier. And he thought this to be possible, and he said against the Allied, Hitler had no influence. In July, my father talked also to the to some commanders of the SS troops he had in France and asked them if they would go with him or not. And they said yes, because they would go with him. Yes, but my father was wounded and was out of action since July 17th.
Yes. You talked about after El Alamein. Do you believe that, as I do, really looking through all the things that that people have written about the Field Marshal, that really it was in that autumn of, shall we say, 1943-44, after El Alamein, when he really went home to Hurlingham. And met with people, met with the mayor of Leipzig, Stuttgart, and so on. That's right, yes indeed, yes.
Yeah.
And talked to them and learnt about their ideas about assassinating Hitler, which he did not agree with. That, you know, there's no question of that.
I think that he believed that they have given up this project. It was the initiative, especially of the Count Stauffenberg, to do it.
Yes, yes.
And maybe Germans are very glad that he did it. Otherwise, nothing would have happened at all. Possibly, yes.
But of course, it has been said, has it not, by Ernst Jünger, apart from anything else, that the most dreadful thing that happened was that accident at Straffing, and that removed your father, because he was the only man. I mean, I've talked to General Speidel, to Hans Speidel's son, who has told me that, in his opinion, this was the most dreadful thing that could have happened for Germany, because Field Marshal Rommel was the only man, the only Field Marshal who would really stand up and say, yes, I will take the responsibility, I will lead.
Yeah, I think so. It's very difficult to give a judgment in retrospect. Field Marshal Kluge was the commander-in-chief in France.
Yes.
At first he was in a disagreement with my father, but then when he spoke to the commanders, especially from the armored divisions, he knew that my father is right, and he also wrote a letter and said, yes, Rommel was right and I was wrong. Wrote a letter to Hitler.
Kluge did?
Yes.
Did he?
Yes, and when 1st of July, it's very extraordinary, yes.
Yes.
He sent a paper of my father, in which my father demanded to draw the consequences out of the lost battle, and he edited my father's paper with a special letter in which he said, yes, my father was right, I was wrong, and so on. But
when it came to the point on July the 20th, and General von Stolpenagel and so on went to La Roche-Guyon,
the dinner.
That's
very
right.
Spooky, yeah.
This dreadful, dreadful dinner that they all had together, and then the news came through that Hitler, of course, had not died, von Kluge, the word that we use is reneged, and said, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do this now." And of course, that meant that von Stolpenagel and so many others were then caught in the net.
Yes, but they didn't inform. They didn't say to Kluge in advance if this will happen. So Kluge went away from his headquarters in the morning, returned in the afternoon, and he was surprised completely. And when he found out that Hitler was still alive, he said, "No, I have not the authority to get the soldiers follow, to make the soldiers follow me.
No.
I am sorry, I cannot do this. Open the surrender in France now." The great problem was also the existence of the SS troops in France.
Yes.
Hitler sent his special soldiers to France. Almost two-thirds of the SS troops were in France fighting
yes.
British and Americans. And they were, the commanders were not unreasonable. They suffered also a lot from Hitler's orders and from the great casualties which resulted from his orders. And they were, but to kill Hitler, this was something beyond their possibility. They couldn't imagine that.
No, beyond their comprehension. Yes, what I think that that I'm trying to establish is the moral attitude of Rommel when he in that autumn of 1943-44 before Hitler called him to Berlin to give him command of Army B, he had met with all these people and listened to their points of view and talked to them and so on, and then when he was given the command of the army, he then went to Fontainebleau, where he was quartered at Fontainebleau for a very, very short period.
Yes.
And then, having talked to a lot of people at La Roche-Guyon, I find that very, very early on, as early as January, preparations were being made for him to go to La Roche-Guyon. Which seems a very unusual thing, because it was, I mean, I grew up in La Roche-Guyon because I am half French. I grew up there, and I remember it was very remote, very isolated, very primitive, and many, many things had to be done in order to make it a headquarters of a field marshal, and it seems strange that he went there from a place like Fontainebleau. But if you read, well, if you read, you of course you have, but General Speidel's book, Invasion, he does say that La Roche-Guyon became the refuge, the place where people could come and talk, and away from the SS, that there was no SS officer at all at La Roche-Guyon.
No, not one. But they had, of course, Dietrich, they were the first, and Hauser, they were both the first army generals of the SS. Sepp Dietrich was the leader of Hitler's bodyguard, but they changed their views during the Normandy campaign.
They did.
And were much closer to my father than to Hitler.
Do you think that your father would have chosen La Roche-Guyon, for example, as somewhere where people, as a sort of almost neutral territory, where people could come? I mean, people did come, like Stulpenagel, Marshal von Rundstedt, General Blumentritt, General von Falkenhausen. They all came, and people...
No, Falkenhausen, my father visits Falkenhausen.
Yes, and I mean the former mayor of Leipzig, and the mayor of Stuttgart, as you say, your predecessor, and Baron von Neurath, they all went to La Roche-Guyon. Well, I mean, it seems that it was therefore a place that was an oasis for them, where they could talk and discuss.
Certainly, Speidel had also many good relations and friends. They came to La Roche-Guyon.
Yes.
This was very much due to the influence of Speidel.
Yes, 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 I see that in his book. But it seems that people are very, very unwilling in this country. The BBC is very unwilling to accept the fact that Field Marshal Rommel was implicated in the conspiracy, not, I mean, let me make it very, very clear, not to assassinate Hitler. That was not his view. He knew of the, as I understand it, he knew of the other people who were involved, von Stauffenberg and people like that, that they were planning to assassinate Hitler. But he did not wish that himself, but he did wish Hitler to be removed.
Yes, and certainly, but yes, certainly.
And La Roche-Guyon, therefore, was the place where all this discussion and in secrecy, so that nobody would know, to the extent that I think General Speidel used to go and meet people on behalf of Rommel, because if Rommel were to be seen to a field marshal of his standing, you know, were to be seen to go and visit these people and talk to them, it might have seemed very suspicious. But General Speidel was able to do this, and he did. And the same thing with von Stulpenagel. He had, you'll have to forgive my pronunciation, but he had Colonel Hofacker, who did the same for him, went and saw people and talked to them, and so on. Von Rundstedt had von Rundstedt had General Blumentritt, who also would come to La Roche-Guyon, and this way it didn't seem, you know, very suspicious. But I think that what went on there in this very, very old chateau was a tremendous, tremendous thing, which had it not been for this accident of your father's and his being removed from the scene, as it were, and von Kluge might well have changed the course of the whole war.
Yeah, this nobody can answer this, but my father went very far, because he spoke to some of his commanders and asked them if I decide to end the war on my own responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going with Hitler or are you going with me?
Yes.
And many of them said, we are going with you. Also, this army general said Dietrich. Yes.
Dietrich.
Yes.
Dietrich.
Yes.
Yes.
And certainly, my father had no ambition to become a minister in the new government.
No.
So he was not included by the plannings of the German resistance movement. But they needed my father to end the war in France and to have control about the German army in France.
Yes.
And there my father promised cooperation, and there is no written papers, after my father went home, he said, I was convinced that to end the war in the West, and even if he could only change a war in Germany with a marching in.
Yes. Well, of course. I mean, what he really... I mean, and he was absolutely correct, because, I mean, not only was he trying to save, all those German cities that were so bombed, and German lives, he was also trying to save Allied lives and so on. And, I mean, after all, from July the 20th, to I think it's May the 5th or 6th or something like that of the following year, 10 million people were killed, which
yes,
is...
certainly, and also in eastern Germany.
Yes.
It would have been very bad, but a marching invasion is much better than a fighting one.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Well, yes, of course. But it is just, and then I think, you know, I've taken enough of your time, but it is to establish the fact that Field Marshal Rommel was in favour of... I mean, there is no question of his not knowing of the conspiracy.
No, he knew it since... at least since beginning 1944.
Yes, yeah, the beginning.
He knew something before, but he knew since beginning 1944, he knew that there is a group of Germans being able to take over government as when Hitler has gone.
Yes.
But my father always said that it was an illusion to believe that the Germans would have followed a conspiracy before 44.
Yes.
Because the Germans were so blindfolded.
Yes, and convinced, of course. Otherwise they wouldn't have fought. Yes, of course.
They were convinced to win the war.
Yes, of course. Yes. Of course. But then your father, had a stature so tremendous, did he not, really, you know, with the German people. I mean, he was, to them, he was a tremendous figure, was he not? His name and his person. This is why I believe, reading about it, that they went to him because they knew that the German people would deeply respect him as a person, as against other people who perhaps were more politically minded, but far, far less well known. Would you not agree with that?
Yes, he was certainly. He had the respect of the people. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, and so therefore, after the coup, he was willing to take responsibility. Not politically, but to give his name and to lead the army and to try and make an armistice.
I think he planned to do this even if there was no attempt on Hitler's life.
Really? Do you really?
Yes. Yes, he believed. He said this would have been easier. Yes.
Oh, you mean with Hitler still alive, you mean?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Because to surrender in France, tell the soldiers there's no reason to continue to fight. Yes.
Yes. So therefore we place, yourself, you have placed the beginning of all of this, really, at the beginning of 1944.
No, I think my father fought on the peace with conditions.
Oh, yes.
Since at least November 1942, my father made the retreat from Alamein against the orders of Hitler. He also gave up Tripolis against the orders of Hitler.
Yes.
And then he was... he even told Hitler that he cannot win the war. But Hitler answered, with me nobody will make any peace.
Yes.
And he was right, of course, because at this time millions of people were killed in the camps.
Yes, I know, yes. And I believe that when he went to see von Rundstedt, and told him of his belief that Hitler should be deposed, and
Rundstedt hesitated.
Yes.
Rundstedt, he was an old soldier, he said, I don't want anything to do with such ideas. I leave this to younger people.
Well, the book that I have read, where it says that when he talked to him, he said, they put it slightly differently, they put it that von Rundstedt knew about various conspirators' plans, but said to your father, you are a young man, I am an old man, you love Germany, you do it. And really, you know...
He had also a distance.
Yes, that's right, and so removed himself. His conduct... afterwards, for example, at the funeral of your father, was inexplicable, really, wasn't it? why
he was confused, and he believed that it was his duty. He was also president of the court, which degradation.
Une dégradation absolument terrible.
And he was also prepared again to become commander in chief of the West.
Was he really?
When Hitler removed him from this place, he told to my father, "Hitler can't kiss my backside." But then he was again commander chief very soon. My father was very surprised.
Old man,
he could say, "I'm ill."
Yes. Well, I still think, I don't know that I shall convince anybody at the BBC, and it doesn't really matter, it really doesn't matter. But I personally believe, knowing La Roche-Guyon, and knowing, the Rochefoucaulds, the Duke and the Duchess that were there, were very welcoming. I mean, she was a Danish princess who spoke German, wasn't she? And they welcomed the Field Marshal. And I think that at Fontainebleau he was far, far too well known to be able to come and go and move and see people and so on, and that he deliberately chose, he had so many other people to do it for him, but chose this little tiny weeny village. Having lived there, lots of these places didn't even have running water where they billeted four or five soldiers. They had a pump in the courtyard for water. So, they had to completely take over the only very big house in the village and make a big telephone exchange and do all sorts of things which were available to him at Fontainebleau. So I think personally that he chose to go there because, as I've already said, it was sealed. He had it sealed. It was an easy place to seal, being built into the background of the limestone hills there, with just one road going through it. He had it sealed off completely. Nobody could come, not even by the Seine, because you could see it very clearly. And there people could come and talk and did. And your father was a very, very great personality, a very great influence, I think, on him. And I think that this group there, what they tried to do was tremendous. I really do. I believe it was tremendous. And I think it's a story that other people ought to know.
Yes.
Would you agree with all that?
Yes. If I have time, I'm just putting down my personal memories and what I heard after the war. I don't know if I will publish it, but I...
But you're writing a book, are you?
No, writing a book, writing something which puts the information together.
But this puts this, what we have been...
I will not publish it.
You won't publish it?
No.
Right, well, you...
I'll leave it to my desk, and then they can do what they want.
But effectively, are you telling me that what we have been talking about, which is Rommel's involvement with the conspirators and all that sort of thing, and this tremendous sort of moral battle that he must have had with his conscience, this oath of loyalty which he gave to Hitler, he must have had an enormous battle with his conscience. But you were saying that as far back as 1942, and then of course the African campaign in 1943, and that finally convinced him. And,
yes, of course, and in Africa my father had no time to do any politics.
No.
You follow the African war, neither Field Marshal Auchinleck nor Cunningham,
yes,
nor Rommel nor Crouvel had any time make political reflections.
No.
Yes, they were far away from the theater in Russia, and this was quite different. Terrible thing.
But of course, I mean, unknown to your father, of course. I mean, were the things. I mean, when he was in Africa, he didn't know about the fact that when he was asking for more troops, Hitler was already preparing his invasion of Russia. He didn't know that the British had cracked the Enigma code, and that therefore his supplies to his troops were not reaching him, and things like that. I mean, you know, really, he fought a tremendous battle there, and tried very hard, didn't he, to see Hitler, to get his troops out and back
out
to... Yes.
At the end of his life, my father said, the Lord is much more intelligent than we are, because all my soldiers are safe in the United States and in Canada.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Did he? But anyway, you will have then, therefore, you will put down yourself, your personal views.
I hope I've written several books, but not on my father.
Not on your father?
Yes.
That's interesting.
I don't want to write a book, but I want to put, if I have time.
Yes.
If
fact.
I'm healthy enough. I will put down what I know.
Yes. Well, as I say, to sum it up, we do agree about the timing of things, about that summer of 44, about his ideas already in 42, and about the fact that La Roche-Guyon really did become the center together with your father.
Yes.
And when you read Invasion 1944, General Speidel talks about all the people. I mean, in one chapter in particular, he talks about all the people who came to La Roche-Guyon, and they are all sorts of people, military, civil, and so on, all dignitaries, all the church, and so on. I mean, it is quite amazing. As I say, what went on there, and so as long as we agree on that is the most important part. Herr Rommel, I mean, I can only say that I'm hugely grateful to you for your enormous courtesy in talking to me. After all, I ring you up on the telephone from London, and you are courteous enough to talk to me.